This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Welcome to the Cosmo Happy Hour. It's everything you would talk about with your best friends, from sex to celebrity to entertainment.
From the editors of Cosmopolitan.com, this is the Cosmo Happy Hour with Alisa Benson.
Like all of you listening to this podcast right at this very second, I am totally obsessed with food. We live in an age of burger buns made out of ramen noodles, donuts hooking up with everything from croissants to waffles to vodka, and bacon wrapped around everything you can possibly wrap bacon around. I'm Alisa Benson, Cosmopolitan.com Happy Hour podcast host. I love to eat. But today we're talking about what can happen if you can't eat. So I am joined by Tess Komen, who's an associate editor at Cosmopolitan.com and also a great friend of mine who just wrote a really amazing essay for Cosmo that we're talking about today about living with Crohn's disease and how that has affected her whole life pretty seriously. Hi, Tess.
Hi.
Was that like the saddest intro ever?
Are you kidding? That was like my inner monologue, like every morning when I wake up. But no, not at all.
Well, you have been living, we're kind of like diving right into this like super serious topic, but I had emailed you a few weekends ago after your story went up, and I was just like, I was so moved by everything that you talked about in this really powerful essay just about how you are always, like all millennials, have been a person that not only is obsessed with eating, but is obsessed with Instagramming your food.
Yes.
Like there, I remember seeing pictures of you and your boyfriend, now fiance, out at like barbecue festivals.
We love it.
You love it. But this year, this disease that you've been struggling with for pretty much your whole life kind of took a more serious turn. And that's what you wrote your essay about. So can you fill readers in who have no idea with what Crohn's disease is with kind of the one sentence summary of what it is and how it's affected your life?
Okay.
One sentence.
The one sentence summary. Crohn's disease is, oh God. It's basically like it's a disease that affects anywhere from your, we're going to get really real, right?
Right. We're getting so real.
Yeah. From your mouth to your rectum, your entire digestive tract. And in most cases, it's a stricturing disease, which means your bowel narrows, which makes it very difficult to eat food sometimes. Or in some cases, it forms fistulas, which are little tunnels that kind of push things that are supposed to stay in your body outside of your body. Pretty gross. Most people's manifestations of Crohn's are just like, just involves a lot of pooping, just a lot of pain, like pooping. It's a chronic illness, so, and most people are like immunosuppressed, so they catch a lot of things easily. But yeah, you don't know by looking at someone that they have Crohn's disease. But basically for me, around New Year's, I found myself in pain when I started eating, which is something that's happened to me a bunch of times before. And so I kind of knew in my heart that I had another stricture forming. And instead of diving into a surgery, my doctor thought it was maybe best, because we've had so many surgeries before, to give my bowel a rest and do an all-liquid diet.
And so, Tess, do you think it's fair to say that you're kind of allergic to food?
Yeah, in a way.
I don't know if that's, like, the fair or right way to say it. But basically, your body, you know, this is one of the things you say sort of plainly in your essay, is that your body just doesn't respond to food the way a lot of other people's bodies respond to it.
Yeah, it's full on rejecting food right now.
Your body hates food.
It hates it.
And which sucks, because you love food.
I love food. Like, on the way here, when we were walking, I walked by some place that had, like, I don't know, it just smelled like garlic pasta, and it smelled so good. Right.
And that probably wasn't even real food. It was probably just like garlic smell.
I know. But it was like 10:30 in the morning. I'm like, okay, great. I want garlic pasta.
Right.
But yeah, no, it's like not only like not responding to it. It's just like full on rejecting it. Like it does not want food right now.
Right. And this is something you've been dealing with for pretty much your whole adult life, basically.
Yeah. I was diagnosed when I was 7.
Okay. So really your whole life.
Yeah. And there have just been like phases in my life where I've been totally fine and then phases where I totally have not been. But it hit pretty bad in college. Like my sophomore and junior year were pretty much like lost to Crohn's disease. And I felt really, really, really lucky after I graduated to be really healthy for my first year at Cosmo. Mm-hmm. And then it kind of came crashing back down again. And then I was good again for a while. And now we're dealing with this. So,
and I know one of the things you mentioned in your essay, because you have been dealing with this for a long time, is that you know, and you kind of hinted on this just now, you had had surgeries to sort of, and it almost seemed like you were in this pattern with your doctor of when things got bad, you would go in for a surgery, you would come out and things would be a little bit better. And then this time around, your doctor was sort of like, we've already tried that. We need to go to plan B. And that was where this liquid diet came out.
Right. Which I think is why I'm maybe having a harder time dealing with this than I normally do.
Sure.
Just because you're right, we've totally gotten into a routine where we know what fixes my particular problem, and that's going in, taking the bad pieces out, and, you know, sewing me back up, and then I am free to eat again, and I have a good patch, and my medications normally work for a bit. So just to hear that we had to start thinking about longer-term things because, you know, there's only so much of your intestines that you can take out before you can't function like a normal person.
Right.
It definitely gave me pause.
Right. And so what did your doctor, I mean, I think one thing that I sort of took away from this is that, like, you are living with a sort of serious form of this. And so it sounded almost like the way you explained in your essay that your doctor was saying, like, we need to try this, but it's almost like he doesn't really know.
Yeah.
Like, you're a bit of a guinea pig. Is that fair to say?
I'm totally a guinea pig. You know, I'm still dealing with the remnants of last year's Crohn's debacle, which was like a pulmonary manifestation.
I don't know what that means.
It's my heart and my lungs kind of freaked out, and okay. We didn't know why. And that's very unusual for Crohn's, and I ended up doing a lung biopsy, which is why I was gone from work so long. That,
right.
Like, knocked me on my ass and was very scary because I'd always been used to dealing with bowel stuff, and then it was my heart was weird and my lungs were weird, and that's really scary.
Right.
Because, you know, I still think I'm going to need a surgery. I think we're just, you know, we're putting off the inevitable. But, you know, you can get rid of your intestines. You can't really get rid of your heart and your lungs, so that freaked me out a bit, but it ended up being that the results of the biopsy were that it was either like an adverse reaction to one of the medications I was on for the Crohn's disease, which, you know, like when you hear those commercials that are always like, in rare cases, this, like,
right.
One of mine was like, in rare cases, pulmonary hypertension, which
right.
Is like for old people who are so like
right.
Ready to be at that stage in their right. Lives. I don't know. That was a terrible thing to say. Or it was like Crohn's of the lung, and it was just like the way the biopsy results came back, we'll never really know for sure. So whatever that ended up being, I'm not fully over it. Like, my heart, my lungs
right.
Are still not normal. Like, even as I'm here, like, talking a lot and talking really fast to get out of breath.
Right.
So there was a reason I said that in response to your question.
Right,
what was
right.
Your question?
I think I was saying, and this was probably like an unnecessarily harsh way to phrase it, but you're a bit of a guinea pig. Like, you're sort
yes.
Of figuring out, you know, you and your doctor are obviously like working through this together, but like, you know, it seemed a little like this liquid diet that you've been on for how long now? 2 months?
Saturday was 8 weeks. Yeah.
Saturday was 8 weeks. Yeah. It's a bit, exploratory.
Yeah.
And so I wanted to talk to you about that because that was sort of the framework for your essay. The title was, what was the title? I have it like right in front of me somewhere.
It was like, here's what I learned from not eating food for a month.
Right. Here's and what I learned from not eating. Sorry, go ahead.
No, there were just plenty of people who commented and were like, I thought this was a juice cleanse. And they were not happy about it. And I
right.
Was like, okay, it was slightly misleading, but right. You know. Whatever.
But also not misleading
yeah,
at all because
exactly.
That's literally what. So you're basically drinking like Pedialyte, right?
Ugh, yeah.
Is that right?
Yeah.
Okay. Do you want to talk about what that tastes like?
it, I feel like I'm being dramatic. It's really not terrible.
Right.
It tastes like if a vanilla milkshake were, like, sitting out for a bit.
Okay.
It's just
like a warm, crusty vanilla milkshake.
Like, I try and make it cold. Like, I shake it up because it says to. But, like, well, it's just the consistency.
Yeah.
Is worse than anything else.
Yeah. Are there different flavors of it, or you're drinking the same thing?
I think there are, but they didn't really give me the option.
Right.
It was like we were fighting with insurance to get it covered in the first place. Right. I was just like, give me whatever there is.
Right. So they were like just the crusty vanilla milkshake flavor.
Right. Right. And I'm also drinking, I think there's an adult version, but I'm drinking the kids one for some reason.
Okay.
Like that's also what just magically appeared on my doorstep. Right. So like old vanilla milkshakes for kids.
I like how you're just like, it appeared on my doorstep. I'm not asking questions.
It literally was just there. Like, yeah. It wasn't like inside my apartment or downstairs. Yeah. Like, it was at my door.
At your door.
I was like, all right, we're doing
this. With your
name
on it.
Yeah.
So this is pretty much what you're drinking. Are you on a regimen where you're drinking it like 3 times a day, like for meals, or just whenever you're hungry or whenever you have to like force yourself to eat it?
Yeah. It's much easier during the work day.
Right.
Because I have one before work, and then, like, I can kind of divide the day up by, like, my mid-morning one, my lunch one, and my end-of-day one. And
right.
Then I come home, and I'll drink more.
Right.
I'm supposed to be drinking, like, 5 to 6 of them, like, ideally 6, but, like...
That's so many.
I can't think of a day where I ever drank 6. It's just too much.
Right.
But, yeah. And then, like, on the weekends, because my schedule is, like, not as rigorous, like, I'll have, like...
Three.
Yeah. But, like, I'm just not as hungry, so it's
right,
fine.
Right, because you're just, like, in bed watching Netflix all
exactly.
day, as we all do, especially this weekend because it was gross and rainy.
Exactly.
So one of the things you wrote about in your essay, which I think was such a brave piece and why I wanted to bring you in here to talk about this, is just sort of, you know, you are doing this thing that is obviously hard for you, but you're doing it for your health, and you're doing it, you know, because you have to, and you are doing it because your body hates food, even though you love it. But one of the things that you've had to deal with is still having a social life and still being engaged and, you know, all these things that are kind of going on. So I know a few of the things that you talk about in your essay are like what it has been like at work when coworkers are sort of like, let's go to lunch. Do you want to talk about that a little bit and sort of, you know, one adjustment is giving up food that you love and sort of switching to this all liquid diet. And then I think another adjustment that goes along with that that's really important is kind of like how that really changes your social life and your work life.
Yeah. And I think, again, that's probably why I'm having a harder time dealing with this, because I did do the same diet in high school. Like, it was a different brand, mm-hmm. and it was for whatever reason, I don't know. But I did it again for 8 weeks, and for some reason it was so much easier, I think, because I couldn't drive. Like, my mom was there to take care of me.
Right.
My friends were much more, like, centralized. I don't remember having nearly as hard of a time doing it.
Right. Well, also, I feel like in high school, generally, like, maybe you're eating lunch at school. Maybe you're going out with your friends for pizza after the whatever. But, like, it's
right.
different than, like, your adult life where you're eating all of your meals.
Right.
Like, on your own.
Yeah. And I think, yeah, I was also, like, eating, like, mac and cheese after school. Like, now that I live in New York City,
right,
I have such an appreciation for all the food around me, and like I've been living here almost 2 years now, and I still like have only made a dent in like the restaurants and like 3 blocks around me. Like, there's so much.
There's
to
so
eat.
Many. They say you can eat at a different one every day until you die and never run out.
Never, yeah,
and never
like,
repeat.
That
one.
Would be the goal. Like, right. I just love to, and like I'm pretty good about like saving my money, and like, but like the money I don't save is like all food related, and that's like a choice that I have made. It's
right.
just like I love to go out and eat. Yeah, I think I had no idea how much my social life revolved around food and drinking. And, like, when I say drinking, I mean like meeting up for like happy hour, like a glass of wine. Like, I don't mean like raging on the weekends,
right.
but like also
but
raging on the weekends.
Right.
Yeah, like, so I don't know. It's also, you know, this diet has taken a toll on my energy. Like, I come home from work and I'm like, no, like,
right.
I'm just dead. And, you know, I kind of have to budget out that energy. And it's like, now if I make plans, it's like going to, and, you know, it's like, it's limited my social circle yet again, because I have like 7 people I like really, really love, but like 15 people I hang out with. Like,
right.
I'm not going to hang out with the people who don't know as much about what's happening
right.
at this point. Like, I've just been kind of putting people off with, like, awkward texts. And, like, I'm so busy, you're sick, and I'm so sorry. Like, love you, I'll see you soon.
Right. And is that because you feel, you know, why is that? Is it just because you don't want to do what I'm forcing you to do right now on this podcast, which is, like, talk about this with everybody? Or is it about just feeling like it's really hard to have these relationships when you feel like you can't do the normal, like, let's grab a drink after work thing?
Yeah. Yeah, I guess I feel like a burden.
Yeah.
Like, in order to ask people to be so, like, it's not, I call it being social, but it's not really being social for people. It's like sitting at my apartment or their apartment and, like, just talking, which is so great. And, like, that's what I do with my best friends to begin with.
Right.
But, like, I'm not going to ask someone I don't know to not have fun
right.
on my account. Do you know what I mean?
Right. Like, you would feel bad being like, hey, I have this idea. Instead of going to happy hour,
right.
what if we don't right. eat or drink anything?
Especially if I don't know them that well.
Yeah.
Like, and sometimes you just look forward to, like, getting a drink with someone you, like, don't know that well, but, like, want to hang out with. Like,
right.
there are plenty of people at work who, like, I love to hang out with, but,
right.
like, not at our apartments. That's
right.
weird. Like,
right.
we would just, of course, just, like, grab a drink after work. And so, like, you know, that with the limited energy, I don't know. I just have so much FOMO to begin with.
Yeah.
Like, who doesn't? That's not just me. That's everyone.
Yeah, of course.
So, you know, all those things.
Yeah.
Welcome to Play It, a new podcast network featuring radio and TV personalities talking business, sports, tech, entertainment, and more. Play it at play.it.
But I thought one of the most sort of, like, heartwarming parts of your essay was when you talked about, you know, not wanting to tell your friends, which is completely understandable, but that basically your best friends, when you finally did tell them, were sort of like, bitch, why didn't you tell me sooner?
yeah. They know me now. Like, I kind of have these patterns. Like I call it, like, the great debacle of whatever year. Like when my debacle starts to happen, I, like, hide in a hole for a little bit, and I, like, go to work, and I come home, but, like, I'll post totally normally on social media, but I won't reach out to people, which is a terrible thing I'm trying to get better about. Like,
oh, we all do that.
Yeah, not just when I'm sick, just, like, as a human being who
right.
should, like, you know, like, have more human interaction with people she loves. Yeah, so I just kind of start to hide, and they'll be like, hey, what's up? And I'm like, nothing, you. Like, I just, like, don't, like, I just, you know, I hide in a hole. And so I think they start to notice that pattern, and they're like, all right, like, which doctors have you seen recently?
Right.
Like, what,
you
know,
what's the deal? Yeah.
They can tell. And yeah, and it's just, like, when I physically, like, can't, like, when I keep turning down invitations of things, like, I would love to do, they're like, all right, why?
Right.
So, you know, and again, like, most of my friends by this point are, like, my best high school friends, my best college friends. Like, they all know. But, yeah.
We were just at a wedding together a few weeks ago
yes.
for our dear friend and coworker, Kathleen, who got married in New Orleans, which is one of the things that you write about in your essay, and basically being able, you know, being in this city, New Orleans, which is so known for food and feeling like you couldn't participate in that. And then, of course, being at the wedding dinner and feeling like you mentioned that you, like, sneak a few bites of food. So what does that mean exactly? Like, you know, you aren't supposed to be eating, like,
right.
when you... You know, after the wedding, like, even though you were just, like, sneak, like, taking a few bites of things, like, does that make you sick?
Yeah.
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 So it's, like, every time you do it is
yeah.
you pay for it.
Well, exactly. And I guess what's a little frustrating, why I say I know I'm going to have surgery down the line, is because, like, even when I'm drinking these disgusting shakes, like, I'm still having cramps.
Yeah.
They're not nearly as bad as they were before, and, like, compared to when I do eat food, they're not nearly as bad as that, but they're still there.
Right.
Which to me means that there's, like, there's a piece that's too far gone, even
right.
with this bowel rest that we're doing, that's going to have to come out. But, and my doctor's been very upfront about that the whole time.
It's right.
Like, we're just trying this because we really want to put off the surgery, but we might have to have the surgery. Yeah, anyway, like, my fiancé and I had been to New Orleans, like, voluntarily on vacation just, like, a year ago because, like, we love food so much.
Yeah.
Like, we just love, like the idea of, like, walking around and drinking is so much fun. The weather's beautiful. And just, like,
there, for people that don't know, there aren't open container laws in New Orleans. You, like, when you go to the bars, and, like, I had the best time when we were just there. And so I just learned all this, which is why I'm obsessed with talking about it. But, Yeah, when you leave bars, they, like, give you a go cup. Like, yeah. You can take a drink to go. And so it's just this, like, happy, joy-filled place where people, like, wander around the streets eating beignets and drinking.
Yes, it's lovely. It's one of my favorite places in the whole world now. And I was, you know, I hated that I was dreading going. And, of course, like, it ended up being totally fine. But, like, to be in a city that's so known for its food that I've specifically traveled to eat at
right. The
last time. And, like, when we left New Orleans, we were like, okay, next time we go back, we'll have to go to these restaurants that we didn't, like, hit up this time around.
Right.
You know, I almost backed out. I almost did. But I, you know, I wasn't going to do that.
Right.
And that was the first wedding I'd ever been to totally sober.
Right.
And, like, of course, it was, like, a great time. Like, it wasn't.
Right.
I didn't sit there being a buzzkill.
Right. Not at all.
Very proud of myself. I had moments in the hotel room before we went down. But, no, I mean, it ended up being great.
Yeah. But, yeah, I think that is, again, like, and, you know, obviously, like, a lot of women don't drink when they're pregnant or, like, you know, so that's obviously a thing that happens, but I think that's really different than sort of feeling like there's something communal about being pregnant. You know, a lot of women have gone through that or experienced it, and I feel like there's a bit of a sense that what you're going through is harder for other people to understand and harder right. to talk about, which is why I feel like it was so amazing that you wrote this really brave essay and kind of talking about all these things we're talking about now. What kind of response have you had since it came out?
I've heard from so many, like, that made everything worth it.
Yeah.
Like, I had no hesitation in writing the essay. Like, I'm pretty open with people about talking about Crohn's, just, like, when it does get more complicated and you're like, give me the one sentence summary. I'm like, right. Oh, God.
Right. That was a really hard question. I'm sorry.
No, but I heard from hundreds of people.
Yeah.
And it started getting pickup in, like, all these other, like, smaller IBD, like, irritable bowel disease organizations, and I used to be really involved with the Crohn's and Colitis Foundation of America. Like, they reached out to me. I'm actually doing a Twitter chat with them tonight.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, which is exciting. It won't be tonight after the podcast comes out, but I'm very excited about that. Just this morning, I got an email from a fellow 24, like, the subject line was, like, fellow 24-year-old in New York City on an all-Peptamen diet.
And oh, my,
like,
gosh.
What?
You have to meet her.
It's a him. But
it's a him.
But he was like, I just had to reach out to you because it was too weird. I heard from hundreds of people, and I'm still going through my emails because I want to answer every single one of them. And just, like, through Instagram and Twitter and Facebook and, again, like, on email, like, and that makes me feel so much saner to talk to
right. People
who actually really get it.
Right. I think talking to people that get it, and I just imagine, like, you know, you were diagnosed when you were 7. Like, I imagine other girls out there who are 7 or 10 or, like, in middle school and dealing with this for the first time and, like, feeling completely overwhelmed, as I'm sure you did and still do, and, like, finding your essay and sort of saying, like, oh my gosh, here's an editor at Cosmo who's engaged, that has this amazing life and these amazing friends and has, like, learned to deal with this. I just think that's so amazing, like, not only for the people that have reached out to you already, but the people who are going to find this at a point in time when they, like, really, really need it.
Yeah. Writing the essay felt like a relief, like, it was something I wanted to do, but hearing from people in exactly those circumstances, like, made me weep.
Right.
Like, I spent a lot of time just, like, going through stories and, like, your email, like, they'd all made me cry, like, happy tears. Like, it was really, really, like, special.
Yeah.
And I wasn't expecting it. And, you know, it's nice to hear from people who have the same insecurities and fears. And, you know, one of the things I really grapple with is not looking as sick as I am. And mm-hmm. of course I don't want to look sick. Like,
right. Whoever
wants to look sick? But, you know, sometimes just at work or in life, I just want to shake people and be like, you have no idea what's happening inside my body. And
right.
just to hear that exact sentiment from, again, hundreds of people.
Right.
Was, like, cathartic.
Well, right, cathartic. Sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off.
No.
But I was also going to say, like, of course, in the office, you have to deal with, like, you know, butt heads like me who Well, one of the things that Tess writes about in her essay is this, like, moment where we got wine and Oreos, like, some kind of, like, cinnamon bun Oreos sent to the office. And I was like, I do social media for Cosmo. So I was like, Tess, hold all these wine and Oreos so we can take a picture for Instagram. I feel like this is so on brand for you. And you basically write about in your essay about how that was a horrible moment because... It's not your brand anymore. I think you actually used the words, I took the photo and died a little inside. Tess, I'm so sorry.
I was being a little dramatic. But it's fine. I wanted to eat the Oreos and drink the wine. Right. That's all it was.
And you couldn't. But, like, I think that's a kind of exactly what you're saying, that, like, you know, not that this is necessarily something you would want to be talking about 24 hours a day nonstop, but at the same time, like, you know, you look as lovely as ever. You know, you're showing up at work. You know, you're doing your job. Like, but, you know, dealing with this really serious thing on the side. Like, I, not to trivialize what you're going through, but just to say this in a way that's, like, relatable. If I, like, skip one meal, I feel like I'm going to, like, pass out from hunger and starvation. You know, and I think that's very real. Like, I think a lot of people feel that way. And you're sort of doing this every single day. And I think... Like you said, not that you would want to look sick, but I think the fact that people have no idea must be just another layer of what makes this challenging.
Yeah. But again, it, like, it does make me feel, like, very hashtag blessed to, like, you know, when I do explain it to people, like, everyone at work has been amazing, and everyone I do end up talking to has been so good, and, like, my poor mother probably wants to strangle me by this point, but, like, she's been incredible, and, like, you know, just it does make you realize what kind of a support system you really have. Mm-hmm. That doesn't just go for Crohn's disease. Like, I've heard from people who have just other invisible illnesses, I've heard them called. Yeah.
I was just going to say, and, like, before you wrote this essay where you were really talking about, like, this specific diagnosis and not eating and being on this all-liquid diet, you'd written a little bit about Crohn's before for Cosmo. I think you did a piece, like, last year or something like that. But that wasn't a term that I really knew. But invisible illnesses, I know, has been something that's been really important for you to talk about in our coverage at Cosmo, where we aim to cover all topics that millennial women sort of deal with. And I think that's a really important one. And we're lucky to have you sharing your perspective and, like, being willing to talk about it.
Yeah. No, I mean, my job is to write about viral news, and what I've found really blows up on the internet are, like, empowering stories from people who, you know, have things going on that people can't see. And so I feel like every other day I'm writing about, like, a 20-something woman or man who, you know, is posting photos of, like, her scars, or, you know, someone said something to her that made her feel a certain way, and it's because, like, she has something going on that you can't see from the outside. Mm-hmm. And that really resonates with our readers, so... You know, it's not just me. It's a lot of people.
Right. And I thought that was another thing that was so great about your piece that you wrote. And everyone should check it out on cosmopolitan.com. Here's What I Learned from Not Eating Food for a Month by Tess Coman. But I think that's another thing that was so amazing about this essay that you wrote, is that I think you really made it feel very universal, even though it's obviously something that most people... You know, I've never been on an all-liquid diet, and that's not something that most people have experienced. But really, that idea, I think, of dealing with something that people can't see from the outside in some ways is very universal.
Yeah.
For those of us who like to complain a lot about our lesser problems.
No. I mean, and that, like, that's the other takeaways. Like, and I think I actually said it in the essays, that just, like, everyone has her shit.
Yeah.
Like, you can't, like, you know, I'm totally guilty of, when someone tells me that, like, she has a cold or allergies or, like, her period cramps are really bad, I'm like, oh, I can't with you.
Yeah.
But, like, excuse me, it's all relative.
Right.
Like, someone's, it's, who am I to judge, like, how terrible your period cramps are? Like, everybody has something.
Right.
It's not just me. Like, it's not just you. It's, like, everybody has something. So. Right.
I complain about my period cramps all the time.
I'm really not trying to single you out.
No,
it's
I know.
Thinking of.
But I think that was why I really wanted to do this and bring you on here to talk about this thing that I'm sure is really difficult to talk about, but I think you're so brave for talking about, because it is true, and it's good to have a reminder that even cool Cosmo babes like Tess are dealing with things on the inside that you can't see. Finally, I did want to ask, was there anybody that when you were younger and you were dealing with this, did you find anybody that was like you now? Like, did you read essays from people who were, like, in their 20s talking about dealing with this?
Oh, God. That's such a good question. I mean, the internet was, like, just starting to become a thing.
Right.
Like, I was diagnosed in 98.
Right.
So I wasn't, like, reading stuff. Like, my parents were more, like, frantically reading things.
Right. And, but probably, like, in books.
Oh, God.
TBT.
Yeah. Yeah, there was, like, I remember when I was in high school, there was, like, this rumor that, like, Deborah Messing was diagnosed with Crohn's disease. I don't know if that's true. I don't know.
Oh.
But, there was this singer who had one really big song and, like, has never been heard from again. Like, her name was Anastasia.
Yeah.
And the song was called, like, One More Time or something. I'll play it for you later.
Yeah. I'm like, can you sing it?
Nope.
But sure can.
But, she has Crohn's, and on her album cover, you can see her scar from her bowel resection. I remember, like, finding that out or reading about it, or someone told her, like, the Crohn's and Colitis Foundation, like, did something with her. And, like, the fact that her scar was so visible on her album, like, I listened to that song on repeat for a million years, because it's also just, like a really, like, feel-good, like, girl power ballad.
Right.
But not, oh, God, I don't know. I have found much, a lot more people, like, now that I'm grown, going through the same thing.
Right, and now that you're talking about it publicly, it makes it easier for people to find you.
Yeah. I mean, when I was in school and really, really, really sick, I must have been talking to, like, the student activities director or something, and she told me about a girl who was a year older than me in a different sorority, who I'm still friends with to this day, who looks like the most beautiful Barbie doll in the entire world. And she's, like, this, like, just, like, lovely person and just so gorgeous. And, like, she had a colostomy bag, and I had no idea. And, like, we ended up connecting because we were both really, really sick and no one knew. And she's awesome. She helped me with a lot.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
And now that is exactly what you're doing for Cosmo readers and people worldwide, just by talking about it. I think it's so important.
Yeah.
Well, Tess, thank you so much for sharing your story on Cosmo.com. Everyone needs to check it out. And also on the Cosmopolitan.com Happy Hour podcast. Tess, where is the best place for people that want to get in touch with you to find you? On Twitter?
Yeah, I'm always tweeting.
You're always tweeting.
I'm always tweeting.
You've had to get some new material.
I haven't tweeted about food in so long.
Yeah.
I just tweet about, like, Netflix and being tired.
Right. Tess was really on the wine and cheese beat for a really long time, the wine and cheese Twitter joke beat. But she's hilarious on Twitter. Follow her. What are you? At Tessie the mess with underscores?
With underscores, yeah.
At Tessie underscore the underscore mess.
Thanks.
Find
shameless plug.
Shameless plug. Follow Tess on Twitter. She is a fabulous human and such, as I've said now 10 million times, that it's probably starting to not sound genuine, but it's so genuine. A very, very brave human for sharing her story. So please look for it. Here's what I learned from not eating food for a month. And thank you guys all for listening to another episode of the Cosmopolitan.com Happy Hour podcast. I'm Elisa Benson. You can find me on Twitter and Instagram at Elisa Benson. Actually, I know I'm forgetting your name, but somebody, I was just in Florida over the weekend, and somebody commented, one of our listeners from Florida was like, I live here too. So shout out to the Florida listeners. Thank you for listening. And please subscribe and share the podcast and like it and tune in next week. See you guys then.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.